people. Let's communicate. What are we doing when we write a book? What is our goal? Think with me about this for a little while. What we're doing is we are communicating with our readers. We're sharing our thoughts and ideas. So how do we do that? How do we get our thoughts from our minds to theirs? How do we do this effectively? How do we as human beings receive communication? I think that if we back away from the detail of writing for a minute and think through these things, we will be better writers, and we will become more confident in what we're doing. The Bible is one place to go to give us really good examples of great communication. And basically, we have three ways. We have pictures like dreams or visions given to the writers. Throughout the Bible, people were led by dreams or visions. We also have stories and anecdotes like Jesus' parables, or like the accounts of David and Goliath, or Jehoshaphat surrounded by the armies, or Moses or Abraham. And we have words like the letters of Paul or directives from the prophets in the Old Testament. I would like to take these three ways of getting the point across and analyze them a little bit. First, let's take the pictures, the dreams or visions. Obviously, we are not going to be giving our readers dreams or visions. Only God can do that. But what we are going to do is paint pictures for them. Look at an example with me. When I say, the girl drove up, you get a picture in your mind. You don't just think of a string of words, but you think of a girl driving up. Some may think of a car. Others may think of a motorcycle. What if I said, the girl drove up in a red car? Haven't I communicated a clearer picture? Well, what if I said the girl drove up in a red convertible? Or the girl sped up in her red convertible? Or the girl sped up in her red convertible, her hair blowing in the breeze? Or the girl sped up in her red convertible, her long jet black hair blowing in the breeze? In the last sentence, you can see much more clearly the picture of the girl driving up. In fact, from the last sentence, you might even begin to imagine some characteristics of the girl. She could be reckless, maybe likes to show off, driving so fast in her red convertible. The point is that the picture you paint as a writer is what communicates the greatest. That's what sticks with a person, the picture. One way you can paint pictures as you write is to take a minute and imagine yourself in the scene. What do you see? What do you hear? Smell? Taste? What are your emotions at the moment? I promised that I would share some of my own techniques, so here goes. When I was writing the biography of Bishop Hardy Coleman, I would spend some time with him and his wife. He would share about his early life growing up in the deep segregated South as a young black man. Then I would go home and sit, thinking and picturing what the scene would be. After a clear picture was formed in my mind, I would begin to write. I would try to paint the picture of the scene. Just as an example, in one chapter, I wanted to share about Bishop Coleman's life as a young adult. He was married and with a family. He preached, but also worked in the fields picking cotton to support his family, and his family worked there also. I could have said it just like I did, but that wouldn't grab the imagination very much. So this is what I wrote. If you were to drive down a certain dirt road in Benton County, Mississippi in the summer of 1951, you would encounter some interesting sights. Sure, the car in front of you would inhibit part of your view because of the dust it stirred up, and your rear view mirror would signify that you were making your own cloudy contribution. That's just the way it was driving on the roads of Benton County. Yet between the dusty episodes, you would see life, and lots of it out in the cotton fields you would pass. Old and young, male and female, people would be out picking the cotton and bringing in the provision of their families. Some would be mopping their brows from the heat of the sun. Others would be fanning away the sweat bees which like to swarm around the workers. Now from there, I would go on to point out Bishop Coleman and his family among the workers. Do you see what I mean? If you can get your readers to see a picture, they will understand more of what you're talking about, and the picture can stick with them longer. We have talked earlier about writing every day for at least 20 minutes. These are good times to practice the art of painting pictures. You can actually grow in your ability to do this as you practice. One way to do this in your busy life, wherever you happen to be, is to imagine lessons you could learn from whatever scene you're in. Let me give you another example. Last year, I needed to get a new passport before our trip to Ukraine. So I went to the passport office where there was a long, very slow line, but I had to get this done, so I got in the line. After a few minutes of nervously tapping my foot, I realized I could make use of this time. I had just read an article by John Carlton which said that we should try to imagine what we would write in the everyday scenes like this. What does this scene represent? What are some lessons we could learn from just such a moment? Though I had no paper in hand, I began to imagine in my mind what value I could pull from the moment. And after I left, I actually wrote a blog post and an email about the time spent in the line. The people closest to me in the line were a young professional couple with a small child. They were from Mexico City and were obtaining a passport for their child so they could go and visit their relatives in Mexico. Then there was a dignified lady of Indian descent. She proudly shared with me that her two sons were medical doctors. She then began to tell me how she had raised her sons to be very diligent with their schoolwork. She had very strict rules for their after-school behavior and was eager to share with me her ideas on parenting. You could see that in that setting there were many things I could have been inspired to write about. At that moment, my mind was already on our upcoming trip and also on the financial suffering of our Ukrainian friends after decades of communist suppression. I also had in mind the money our organization had just sent to India for some poverty-stricken school children. So I wrote about how every culture, including ours, had such a dichotomy of lifestyles. There were the rich, educated, and prosperous like these people I had just met, but there were also the poor, almost forgotten ones. And the post went on from there. There were many ideas which could have sprung from that encounter. But you get the point I'm trying to make. When you are standing in a grocery line or waiting in a carpool line or shopping in a mall or working in your office, take a moment to observe. Who are these people? What do they want in life? What would you say to them if you had liberty to speak? When you begin to practice this, you may be surprised. You might even find some picture lessons for your book. At the very least, you will grow in your ability to blend your writing and your pictures of everyday life, and such pictures will certainly make more of an impact than just the facts. So now let's move on to stories. From the stories recorded in the Bible to Aesop's fables, it's very clear that stories can have a greater significance than words alone. In his book, Intentional Living, John C. Maxwell says it like this: "Everyone loves a good story. We always have. Stories tell us who we are. They inspire us, connect with us, animate our reasoning process, give us permission to act, fire our emotions, and give us pictures of who we aspire to be. Stories are us." And then he goes on to say this: "As a communicator, I spend a good portion of my day sharing stories. People don't care a lot about hard facts. They don't even want to look at pie charts. They want excitement. They like drama. They care about pictures. They want to laugh. They want to see and feel what happened. Statistics don't inspire people to do great things. Stories do." That was from John Maxwell's Intentional Living, published in 2015 by Hatchett Book Group. So how do we find stories? How do we know which ones are right for our audience? Well, one of the practices we're establishing is a quiet time every day, listening to God. During those moments, we can expect to hear new ideas. As we do this, we may be surprised at how He will remind us of stories we heard many years ago, or maybe even episodes in our own lives which will emphasize the points we're making. Think about the story of David and Goliath in the Bible. How many sermons have you heard which were included in this story, and how many lessons have been taught? How the young boy had more faith in God than all of the armies of Israel. How the fact that David praised and sang songs to God increased his faith so that he was ready for the moment. How David's encounters with a lion and a bear while guarding the sheep gave him confidence that he could kill Goliath. How David relied on his own proven armor and not Saul's armor. How David saw that the giant was not taunting just the people but God himself. How David knew that his small slingshot was with God was greater than the sword, spear, and shield of Goliath. There were many more principles which have been shared using this story. One of the main things about stories is that even more than with pictures, your audience is captivated. They want to know how it turns out. Once the story has been told, readers can remember it long after they remember other things you may have said. The impact is lasting. Often your stories can be personal memories, scenes from your own life, encounters you have had with people, even your family. I'll give you an example from my book, Forever Upward. The point I was attempting to make was that taking Bible verses out of context can sometimes hamper their true meaning. So I used a personal story to introduce it. We live in the Atlanta area now, but this episode was taken from a time when we lived in Mississippi. While in the second grade, my granddaughter Lauren was required to give a report on the state of her choice. Needless to say, we were delighted when our Atlanta-born granddaughter chose our state, Mississippi. Her accompanying prop was a poster with information about the state. Right in the center of the poster was a tiny dot with the words, Blue Mountain, our town. She had cut the dot and the words from a map of Mississippi. When I saw the tiny dot and words, I couldn't help but smile. There was no point of reference to the town. Then I went on to say that this reminded me of the way people will pull Bible verses out of context and put them on the refrigerator. Often doing this would skew the true meaning of the verse. I went on to talk about the satellite approach, like you see in spy movies. The big picture is what you see first, and then there is the greater focus for detail as the satellite hones down on what they're looking for. The point is that many episodes from your life or from stories you have heard in the past can be used to enhance your writing. Of course, the many accounts in the Bible give us a wealth of material for our books. Besides your own repertoire, you may find stories on the internet. There are many books which are full of stories for speakers or writers. You can find some in your library or at bookstores. A good place to look might be books written for Toastmasters. Speakers know that good stories will get better attention than just the facts. The point here is that just the facts is not enough to leave a lasting impression on your readers. Now let's move on to the third way to communicate. Words. Just words. I had the most interesting thing happen to me while writing the transcript for this webinar. Just as I awoke one morning, thoughts about communication started flooding my mind. I knew that they were from God, so I began to write them down, and the thoughts were kind of like this. What are we doing when we write or speak to each other? We're communicating our ideas and attempting to transfer our ideas to another person. We want to share our thoughts. We aren't sharing words, we're sharing thoughts. Then the whole idea of language began to flood my mind. We use our alphabet with letters assembled in a certain way and sounds assembled in a certain way to transfer our thoughts and ideas to another person. But the language is like a code. When someone knows the code, they can understand what the other is saying, the meaning. If someone does not know the code, they won't be able to understand the ideas you're attempting to transfer to them. When we grow up speaking a certain language, the codes come so naturally to us that we don't even realize that we're deciphering it. Yet we are. It is still a code. For instance, if we don't know the Russian code or the Chinese code, we won't be able to grab the thoughts being communicated in those languages. If we're in a group of people speaking a different language like that, the others may laugh or applaud when they hear others speak, But we don't. We don't know their code. So we have to have someone interpret for us before we can understand what's going on. Now, when we drill down a little deeper with this thought, we realize the same applies to vocabulary. If we speak with words which are unfamiliar to our audience, we miss the mark. We haven't communicated properly. That's why it's important not to try for big words, but words that the readers know. To explain what I mean, let me share a funny family story. My grandfather was a rural mail carrier in a South Georgia farming community. This was about 100 years ago when there were lots of farm workers who hadn't gone to school. Almost every day, my grandfather would find someone just standing by the mailbox when he came by, and they would want him to write an order for a letter for them. So he would do it. One day, a young man was standing beside the mailbox waiting. Papa said, "What can I do for you, Joe?" Joe's reply, "I want you to write a letter to my girlfriend." "Okay, Joe, what do you want me to say?" asked Papa as he pulled out paper and pencil. "Well, I don't really care what you say," said Joe, "but use consequences. I think that's a pretty word." Now, that's what many first-time writers do. They think in terms of words more than thoughts, and it really gets overwhelming. When they try to write using big words, they lose their readers. When we try to impress others just by using a big vocabulary, we do just as Joe was doing. We miss the mark completely. The readers may or may not be impressed, but we definitely fail to communicate. Now, if you're writing for an academic audience, you will use a big vocabulary, which will be appropriate there. But if not, use words your people understand. One famous writer's quote, and honestly, I don't remember who said it, said this, "Don't use a big word if a smaller one will do." The point is, when you write, you're sending a code, the words, which the readers need to know, to decipher, to understand. The appropriate vocabulary is the one which will best suit your audience. You're not just writing words. You're conveying thoughts from your mind to theirs, so you want to use the best means possible when doing this. As I said, this idea that good writing is just using a big vocabulary is a common pitfall for first-time writers, but actually it should be a relief to know that your goal is not to impress everyone. Your goal is to transfer your ideas to another, and using the language they're familiar with is the best way to do that. Now, let's include a caveat here. When we talk about a suitable vocabulary, we don't mean that you use the same words over and over until readers go to sleep. I've included a couple of PDFs of action words and power words. These are common words, but ones which have more impact. When you use common words which invoke emotions and show action, you convey your meaning with power, which is really our goal. We want to convey our thoughts with power and emotional involvement. Now, one of the writer's best tools is the thesaurus. You can go to thesaurus.com and plug in a word you seem to be using too much, and there'll be a list of words which you can use instead. They'll mean the same thing, just to keep your message interesting. So, let's recap. Instead of just thinking in terms of the words, let's think in terms of the thoughts and messages we want to leave with our audience. Thus, using word pictures, stories and anecdotes, and meaningful language can help us to convey what we want in the most impactful way. After all, that is our aim. Powerful, impactful, even life-changing messages. So let's go do this. That's it for this time. See you in the next webinar.